Welcome to the Metal Maven Podcast, where we explore and discover the process and passions of artists in the metal music and art community. In episode 13 of Metal Maven Podcast, I'm joined by Kuhn Janssen, and he plays synth and piano for Epica, you know, amongst other things. We're going to get into that today. It's going to be awesome. How are you doing, Kuhn? It was so nice to have you here.
Well, thank you. I'm doing actually pretty well. And thank you for having me on the podcast, although I pressured you a little bit.
I had a feeling before I saw you. I was like, he's going to ask me. I know it. And so go backstage at the New York show for Design Your Universe. And we just say hi. And all of a sudden you're, so when am I going to be on the podcast? And I said, anytime you want. So here it is.
Well, I basically heard all my friends come on the podcast already. So I thought, well, maybe I'm going to be next. I'm just going to ask it.
Yep, just ask and you shall receive. I told you, I said, I know I want to talk to everybody in Epica, but I have to spread you guys out a little bit.
Of course, otherwise it's too boring.
Yeah, you got to tease everybody, you know, keep them coming back. Mm-hmm. So we're going to start with recent events with you. So let's talk about Dragon Force.
Oh my God.
Right? For their latest release, Extreme Power Metal, you perform keyboards, and I believe you also co-wrote a song on the album.
Yes, I did, yeah.
So you've toured with Dragon Force before with Epica, and you also recently performed with them on stage at the beginning of February. So how did you end up collaborating with them on their new album?
Well, we became friends on tour, so that's how it usually goes. I think it was 2015 when we did the Quantum Enigma tour. We did two tours with Dragon Force, and yeah, you know, you get to know each other. You're in the same venue every day, and you go through the same stuff every day. So you become friends, you know, you're musicians. I'm not really like a super social person, like, for instance, Isaac is. So, and Fred, the former bass player for Dragon Force. So, but, you know, they were very nice, and actually one of the nicest bands, like people-wise, to tour with. They were very easygoing, and you know, they don't take themselves too seriously, as you might know. Yeah, which is really fun on tour. We also try to not take ourselves too seriously and just have fun, and they were doing actually the same. So it was really good vibes over there. And then later on during festivals, you bump into each other, you know, and you still be friends, as rock stars are friends. Everybody's friends, of course. So fast forward a little bit. So last year we took some well-deserved break from touring, as you might know. And I was like facing that year doing nothing. So I was actually thinking, what should I do to maybe make some money or just like try to evolve into something I want to do? And when I was thinking about that, I was going into the direction of being like a orchestrator or arranger for other bands, like Miro always did for us in the beginning and always did for other bands like Camelot and Rhapsody of Fire and stuff. So like the orchestration through my own home studio, so I could be at home but still do some super awesome jobs. And at the same time, I don't know where, but I think on Blabbermouth, I read an article that Dragon Force was going to record a new album. Of course, I knew the band, and I knew that their former keyboard player, Fadim, left the band. So I thought, hey, maybe this is an opportunity because I know the guys. It's, you know, easier access to them. So I actually just sent a text message to Fred, and I said, well, you know, I know you going to record a new album. I think the album before that, somebody else did it. So maybe it's okay if I do it this time. And he actually replied, I think within 15 minutes, yeah, maybe that's a good idea. So that's how it works.
Well, yeah, if you don't ask, you don't receive. So
yeah. So then suddenly I was getting nervous on, holy shit, I have to do this now. Just throw myself into the deep. Yeah, that's how it came to be.
Yeah, well, that's the only way to go. I mean, it's kind of fun and exciting to do something you've not really done before, so.
Yeah, it was really exciting, and the timeline was perfect for me. You know, it was just in between us as Epica doing basically nothing. So it was super easy. I was at home, so I could, you know, the kids were just at this age that they were going to school full days. So I suddenly had some time on my hands, and this was the perfect way to kill that time.
Well, speaking with Joost in episode 11, I believe, he mentioned that most members of Epica are composers, so I know you are definitely one of them. This new dimension of sound for Dragon Force, how did you infuse your ideas seamlessly into what they already created? So how do you approach that kind of task?
Yeah, well, that was like figuring it out when I was going, you know. I didn't really had a plan beforehand. I just knew what I could do. And I knew what they wanted. So, of course, we had some meetings beforehand. We talked over Skype. What does this new album have to sound like? And they basically wanted to go a little bit back to their old sound. Yeah, so retro gaming style, you know, Dragon Force. A little bit over the top. But then, of course, I come from this symphonic angle. So for me, naturally, it was easier to kind of write from like a string section point of view, which is basically the same because either way you write for string section or you write for synths, it's basically the same notes. And actually the synths, they kind of sound like a string section, but if they are from the 80s, it's just a bad sound, right? So I thought, well, maybe combine that two worlds and try to put as much as possible of me into it without, you know, like don't have it sound like Dragon Force anymore, because they obviously know what they want. Yeah, you just have to find a way in every song to make it work. They just started to send me demos without any keys whatsoever. So I had like a total carte blanche to do whatever I wanted. And then the anxiety kicked in a bit. So the first song I did, I think I spent like 2 weeks on it, just perfecting it the way I thought. It was only a demo, right? So only perfecting it the way I would do it. And yeah, I had to tweak it here and there and make it the best possible way I could. And then send it over to Sam. And oh man, that one day that he, I think he was in New Zealand at that time. So, he's on the totally different time zone. And then he came back to me. Yeah, man, this, the way it sounds, it just makes me want to drink. So that's a good sign. And I was like, ah.
You're like, oh, thank you. I've been sitting here worried so much about how it would be received. But
yeah,
I mean, Sam has deemed your work majestic. So
yeah.
I think for the blog promo excerpt, I may introduce you as the majestic Kuhn Jensen if you're down for it. I feel like it would definitely grab people's attention.
Yeah, it might. But I think that's more of a promo thing to call somebody majestic. No, but it, you know, the best thing is that they are really happy with the result. And I'm really proud of it. So yeah, it was really nice to do it. And I think it was like a test to see if I could do this kind of thing all by myself. Of course, whenever I had a question, I could call Joost van den Broek. He'd been like some sort of mentor for me in this way, and he helped me a lot. But in the end, I even made my own decisions at some point.
Yeah, so
it was really scary, but it also was a really, really big learning curve. And a really good school for me to discover new things, actually. And it helped me a lot, also for our new album, I think.
Yeah, it was kind of a good, like, workout just to, like, prep you for Epica 8.
Well, yeah, I didn't approach it that way because that make it sound like it was just like a preparation or rehearsal for my own stuff. But no, it was kind of... I learned a lot from it, let's say that. And I had to update all my stuff. I had to update all my sample libraries. And I actually built myself my own studio desk just to be, you know, able to sit down every morning and work on something. And that's different if you work for yourself, because then you're writing for yourself and you're never satisfied. And if you work in if somebody tells you what they want, then you just make it. And you make it the best possible way you think you can. And if they're happy, then it's okay, you know. But yeah, sometimes you have to go back and redo stuff. And yeah, it was a really good experience.
Do you have a favorite song from the new Dragon Force album?
My favorite song. I can't help it, but I really like the Celine Dion cover. The Titanic song, the My Heart Will Go On. I think it's just... perfect fit for Dragon Force, and every time I hear that at the end of the album, it's just great. But then I think maybe the first one, that's also the first song I worked on for them, and I think that worked out really well. Yeah, of course, I could say the song I co-wrote, but yeah, it's a bit cheesy. And then the other ballad, I really like that too. The Remembrance Day is it called? So I kind of they sent me the song, and for me it sounded like this funeral for a soldier. Like you see a rainy day and you see like the flag on the casket and it's going down and they have the salute shots and it had that feel for me. So then I kind of thought, well, maybe bagpipes will work with that. So I made a whole bagpipe intro and actually liked it. So that was really funny. I was really scary when I sent that over. I thought, no, they're going to find that ridiculous, but it kind of worked out.
Yeah. No, and it's good because I feel like, I mean, yeah, you could say I wasn't preparing myself for the next album by doing this project, but I think it kind of opened you up creatively and prepared you just yourself, you know, like as a musician to just be open to possibilities for your next project that was coming up.
Yes, it gave me different points of view, different angles to look at things and also, you know, to dive into those synth sounds and actually work with more of electronic instruments. You know, I thought maybe we could incorporate that more in our sound because last album we totally went full organic sound and we actually recorded every instrument for real. So there's no computers on our latest album. But, you know, there's such a big world of cinematic sounds and drones and scapes and whatever you can use to enhance the atmosphere in songs. And I kind of learned it through my search for the right sounds for Dragon Force. And yeah, that made my world a little bit bigger. And I think it will show in our next album as well.
Reading your entry for The Essence of Epica, the biography book for the band, and for those who haven't read this, you should go buy it. I'm going to put the purchase link in the blog post. I usually ask about musical beginnings, but I know that most children in Europe begin musical studies very young as either part of their normal school curriculum or, you know, their parents' choice. Ultimately, you went to conservatory. You began as classical, but that didn't quite work out. But pop, that worked out for you. So was it just classical was too rigid or, you know, what made you switch to pop?
The level of commitment was way too high for me. I you know, I like to play and I like to play music, but to really commit to studying classical music all the time, every day, that I just didn't fit me. And that showed really soon when I entered the conservatory. I just couldn't keep up with the other students. They were practicing the whole day and they had 7 new pieces every week. And I was struggling for just finish one piece just because I couldn't commit to it. And then I heard about this pop music school, which is, of course, way more fun because you can play your own music. You can actually make and create your own stuff instead of having to do and study what other people thought for you. So that fitted me way better.
Yeah, you definitely, I don't know, you needed more freedom in creating music is what it seems like.
Yeah, maybe that. Yeah, you can say it like that, yeah.
But it seems only fitting that you found your way to symphonic metal. You know, it carries a vein of the classical, but also has that, you know, that badass edge you enjoyed listening to growing up, listening to metal music. So how did you arrive at Epica?
Well, yeah, of course, classical music, everything comes from classical music, basically, right? So
yeah.
So there's a thin line between metal and classical music, especially the style we do. But I always liked classical music and also the epicness of it because, you know, like those big symphonies, they are metal in a way. So you have every style you can find within the classical music. And, you know, at the Classical Conspiracy, we actually demonstrated that. I think that there's a really thin line between just put guitars on it and it's metal. But I don't know when I arrived. I think it always was naturally there. I think I rolled into metal through cousins, you know, giving me like Metallica cassettes and stuff and liking that. And then I think I kind of like rolled into reading the magazines like Aardschok and the metal magazines. And then you read about stuff with orchestra or keyboards. And I think it were those early bands like The Gathering and Tristania and Trail of Tears that got me into that female fronted vibe. And I think I read an article about After Forever back then in that magazine. And yeah, I really liked that music as well. So yeah, that's the basic point of how you get to Epica, I guess.
So did you end up connecting with Mark at some point? Like, how did you get into the band?
Yeah, I read the article about After Forever in Aardschok. And I think at the end of the article, it said that their keyboard player recently quit. And if you wanted to join, you could send an email to Mark, or I don't know if it was Mark or somebody else. But yeah, I didn't even have an email address back then. So I had my big sister make me an email address.
Yeah.
to write an email.
That's
my
right.
My first ever email to somebody was, I think, yeah, probably was Mark, I guess.
Yeah.
So, hi, I'm Kuhn. I play piano. Can I join your band?
See?
Yeah.
It's that method has always worked for you. You're just like, hey, can I do this? And they're like, okay, come on over.
Just reach out. And then, yeah, of course I had to meet them and do some sort of audition. But I was kind of confident, maybe too confident back then, about that. I could already play, but I didn't really play keyboards and I didn't really perform with bands before. So
when I talking to Joost, you know, when he was working with Arjen Lucassen, He said he didn't know everything. When he was like, yeah, I can do this. Yep, we're good.
Yeah, of course you have to bluff your way into everything.
Just a little bit, but hey.
If you wanna grow, you have to make them believe that you can do it already.
There you go. Well, now, you know, Epica's on to the 8th studio album. You know, that's underway. So what is your creative process going into a new album? Have you refined your approach to composing and, you know, collaborating with your band members throughout the years?
Well, I think you learn from every experience. And the thing I learned most, or I educated myself in, is to make demos or pre-production. So my skill at recording my own songs became better. But on the other hand, I think composing and showing your songs to other people, that's always scary and it's always a struggle. And you're always insecure about if it's good enough or not. So I don't think you can ever learn that. It's the same with Dragon Force, the same with other bands I worked with in the last couple of years. It's always scary to show the stuff to somebody else, even if you're working with them for 20 years, like the band members in Epica. It's always weird to send it out and then, you know, have to wait to see what they think of it. Although you worked for it, on it a very long time, and then it's always a relief when they like it, or yeah. And just sometimes they don't like it, or they say, hey, maybe this is better, or you could approach it like that. And then usually it's right, because you can become stuck in some sort of tunnel vision that you want something to sound like something that it's not.
In regards to the process, you create kind of your sound that you would like on your end, but how do you link it with everybody else's? Are you guys all just sharing demos with each other? Like, what's that process to kind of fuse everything together?
Yeah, that actually goes really natural. I think now we approach it a little bit differently this time, but usually we just make our own songs in the home studio. And then when I make a song, I program drums, bass, guitars, basically everything, even some grunts or vocal lines. But of course, when I program drums, it doesn't sound like the way Arjen would play it, because he's a drummer. It's totally different. And I can express myself on how I want it to sound, but it's not going to sound like if he does it. So then if the song is done, Arjen takes the drum part and he programs his own part, or he plays it, and then it immediately sounds like Arjen is playing. But I think that's also the strength of our band, is that everybody writes their own stuff, but every other member makes it personal. And all those five or six personal views together, that makes our sound.
I know you guys all have your separate studios, so I was just wondering how all of that worked out together. So,
yeah, we live very far apart, so we cannot sit down anymore and just work on stuff. So we have to do it like that. And this time we rented a big villa somewhere in the middle of nowhere and had a writing camp for a week, which was actually new for us. Of course, when we started out, we jammed in a rehearsal room, but there's no time anymore. and it's too expensive to fly everybody in. So we kind of did that to see if that worked for us. Just sit in a house for a week and work on each other's songs. And that actually worked pretty well.
Nice. Well, it's good to find what works, you know, especially now that everyone's, you know, far away from each other. So coming together like that is a kind of essential to kind of setting the tone for like the new album. So it's awesome to hear.
Yeah. And I think it made the songs quite a bit better. So it's a good way of working. I think we're going to do it next time, maybe even for 2 weeks.
Hey, whatever like yields the best result, you know, if it works for you, then like continue that.
It's all for the best.
So now that we've discussed the new album a little bit more, I'm super excited about the Epic Apocalypse headliner tour this October.
Awesome, man.
So you guys will be... Oh, yeah. I had fun with that poster. That was a cool design. So you'll be headlining with Apocalyptica. I'm loving everything about this, so I hope you guys bring it to the States eventually. That would be so epic.
That would be epic, yeah.
So how are you feeling about performing the new music live and starting up the tour engine once more?
Well, at this point, I'm not really into that mood yet because we're in the middle of recording. I was in the studio today and Isaac is recording his guitar parts. And next week we fly to Prague for the orchestra, which is awesome. So I'm not really into the playing live mood already, but we keep it in mind when writing and recording. So I think the new songs are really going to kick ass on stage. That's one of the objectives we had. And in that regard, I really am curious on how it's going to work. And it's always exciting to play new music because you've been playing the old songs now for like 3 years. It's about time we had some new songs, new material. It's going to be so hard which songs we're going to kick out a set list, actually.
I know. I think that's the toughest part. Because then you have the classics that everyone kind of expects you to do.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're like, oh, I want to just put this new song in, though. So
every album, there are new classics. So which one to kick out, right?
I know, right?
and then we have six opinions, which is hard sometimes. But eventually, we're going to have a killer set, I guess.
I mean, I guess it's better to have like more options than none. You know, like there's so much to choose from. But
yeah, yeah.
I wanted to talk about, well, now that we're talking about going onto the stage, you know, your stage presence has really evolved since transitioning to the NuMotion curve board.
Mm-hmm.
I love that thing.
Me too.
What led to this change and how did it transform your performance? Because the show is so much more engaging when you interact with the crowd.
Yeah, I'm really having more fun when I can do that as well. So I think it's a natural process which evolved from... one step at a time. I think for the Paradiso gig, the live DVD, which never got a release, that was the first time I got a rotating stand, but it was not fully rotatable because I just borrowed it and we didn't have like the wireless stuff yet. So, but when I had that, it was like a step up because now instead of just being at one spot, you can actually move around a little bit and then there's no going back anymore. So you have to have something like that every show, otherwise it's more boring for me, but also for the audience.
Yeah, because we don't need you stuck at the back of the stage just hanging out back there. We want you forward talking with us,
right?
It's supposed to be.
So whenever you know you take one of those steps, you cannot go back anymore. So the rotating stand, I had it for quite some years, and then I think it was during a tour in the US when the guys from NuMotion approached me if I wanted to try that keyboard. They're from Montreal, Canada. And I said, yeah, of course, because I haven't seen it. I didn't see it before. And I thought, well, maybe it could be a cool new gimmick that nobody has, which can, you know, boost my appearance and Epica's appearance and provide me with a lot more fun on stage. So it was wireless as well. And I tried it for one song and I couldn't go back anymore just for one song or two songs in the set. And it's a fun thing. It's a new thing. Well, back then it was a new thing. And still, you know, it's not very common the way it's built, the curved keyboard, but also a keyboard player walking around and doing the occasional crowd surf. It's never, actually, I think it's never been seen before or not that much. So it, you know, it makes me and makes the band stand out a bit, which is good. Yeah. And then we evolved the whole thing, you know, with building the giant rail in the, we can't really bring it to everywhere, But I have a small rail in the US and I have a big rail in Europe to be really able to like move around the whole stage. So we had that built. It's all custom made. And then together with Arjen and Igor, our techs, we created this setup, which is totally wireless. And with everything wireless, with systems that he actually had to invent to make it work. And that's really, really cool that I can do that. I'm really happy that we have the brains and the possibilities in-house to do that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you have a solid crew. Your guys are good.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this kind of links back too, to growing up. I mean, you were discussing in The Essence of Epica, your first music teacher. She said that, you know, you loved performing as well as playing. You know, you liked to be on stage. You liked to engage people. So it's like, this was just the natural thing that had to happen for you.
Maybe it is. I never actually approach it that way, but it comes naturally, and I'm really having fun on stage. It's not just acting, but
oh yeah, it's all you.
I really have the best time on stage, yeah, and it's not played, and I'm you know, I'm gonna make jokes with everybody on stage and do stupid stuff, but it makes it more interesting for me, and as long as people seem to like it, then it's fine for me, right?
Oh yeah, well, we definitely do love it, so keep doing this, don't ever stop.
I hope I can do it a lot more years.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, let's move on to family, right? You are a family man.
I am.
You have a son and a daughter. So how's everything going with you in regards to family? Like, how do you manage raising a family and being a working musician touring?
Well, there's not really a choice. You just have to manage it. And of course, all the props go to my wife. And behind every successful man, there's a woman who guards the castle. Without her, I couldn't have done it. But the good thing about us, or actually I think that's the good thing for our situation, is that she grew into it together with me. We got into our relation like a few months before I auditioned for Epica. So she's been there all the way. She grew with us. So she knows where we came from, and that it was like every step she was there. So it all went very natural.
She did backing vocals, right, for the Phantom Agony?
Yeah, not on the album, but she was on the We Will Take You With Us DVD.
Yes, We Will Take You With Us. That's where I saw her.
And on every other album we ever released, she's doing choirs or backing vocals.
There's definitely like an understanding of what has to be done in order to make this work.
Of course, yeah, and she can sing beautifully. Yeah, so whenever we did like the in-stores, really at the beginning, the in-store shows just to promote the first album, she was there to do backing vocals, and it all became very, it was all a natural process. And she was our first merchandiser, actually. After a few shows, we decided to sell some shirts, and we needed someone. Well, you ask a girlfriend. So she did it. She did our merch web shop for like really in the beginning. She did the web shop for a year, maybe really long time ago. But yeah, then, you know, she grew with us. And that's a good thing for us, because then you know the challenges and you know what's happening. If you get into a relationship and suddenly you go away for 3 months, that's weird. But if you just start out with a weekend show and then maybe two a weekend and then maybe the first tour, which is 3 or 4 days, you know, it's easier to cope with. And of course, it's a job as well. So you just have to make a living now. You know, I have a kid, I have a mortgage. We have to drive our car. We have to eat some bread. So I have to do it as well, right? I cannot stop it suddenly.
In 2015, there was kind of, the brakes were put down a bit. You were forced to sit out of Epica's North American tour due to your wife being diagnosed with cancer. And I can't imagine how difficult that must have been for you, all those potential outcomes playing out in your mind, plus taking care of your children and helping them navigate the situation. And what I do love about Epica too is that with them, touring yields to family. You know, there's a complete understanding of that priority. And, you know, luckily your wife right now, she's made it through her treatments, recovered obviously, but how did this event affect you both personally and professionally? Was there a revelation as to how things needed to be moving forward in regards to family and career? It seems you've also prioritized health and fitness after that event too, taking care of yourself, taking care of each other. So just wondering how you dealt with all of that.
Yeah, it was of course a big blow when she got diagnosed with cancer. Your world crashes down. I hope nobody has to ever witness that, but you know, for her it must have been way worse as well, because I didn't even have the disease. I'm really fortunate, I think, in this particular situation that I am in a band that is doing well. So, of course, when you're in a band, you are home more often than when you have like a 9-to-5 job, I think. So that makes it easier. And then, of course, being in a band so long with the same people who also know Linda, then, of course, you know, your friends, and they immediately understand that there's no way that I can go away for a month with her having like go through chemo and stuff. So, of course, they said, yeah, no problem at all. Just stay at home. We even talked about what to do, just cancel the whole tour or go with a replacement. And of course, you know, that's totally not up to me at that point. But I said, you know, just go. And of course, you know, a lot of good people in the business. So I just said, well, you ask Ruben if he wants to do it. And if he can do it, then just go ahead, or just put my stuff on the backing tracks, also possible. So I think for the United States, it was easier to do the latter. Because, you know, with visa and stuff and arranging all that kind of things, it's better to just put the stuff on tape. And for the European tour, apart of Ruben, who is now in Blackbriar, but who was in Revamp at the time, he took over for me. Which is, of course, it gave me time to be at home and to take care of Linda and the kids. And the band could go on. So that was the ideal situation in a very unideal time.
You do seem to have a great relationship with your children. Do they understand how cool you are? Like, what is their perception of you? You know, to them, are you just, you're just dad?
Well, they still think I'm cool. I think in a few years, they think that I'm totally uncool. So I have to enjoy it a little bit. No, yeah, my daughter, she's 9 now, and she sometimes asks, well, daddy, so you're actually famous? And then, you know, it's a really weird question, because, you know, if you think about it, I am famous, but it's not that I'm famous. I don't get recognized even when I go shopping here or there. It's you know, in a rare occasion when we are playing a show somewhere anyway, and you walk around the city, then you get recognized, but not here, which is totally fine by me, because I wouldn't want it the other way around.
Yeah, you kind of have the best of both worlds. You know, you get to go do the glamorous stuff, but then you can kind of be low-key and off the grid when you're like just living your normal life.
Mm, but she, you know, she gets it a little bit. And then last time we played in Utrecht here in Holland, we took her to the show. Linda took her, and she, you know, they got a good seat at the lighting desk. At some point, I think Isaac mentioned her. Kato was watching the show. And then everybody applauded for her.
Was she like, no?
And then she was really proud later. She said, well, and I was at the show. She was, you know, proud that she could stay up late. And I was at the show, and they mentioned me, and everybody was clapping for me. And that moment, I think she realized that they do that for me as well a little bit. So that's funny. And then there are friends at school whose parents know about me, but they don't actually know me. You know each other from being at the school, but you don't really know each other. And then, yeah, the father of my friend, he actually is a fan of you. And then, you know, the concept is a little bit weird for her still, but she gets it a little bit.
Well, that must have been a cool night for her. She got to stay up late and see her dad play in a metal band.
Yeah, and of course she sung on the album, the last album. So
yeah, I remember you talking about that.
Yeah, but we weren't allowed to play that song as an intro because she would be too embarrassed. That's what she said. And luckily, we did the Design Universe 10th anniversary show with a different intro. So.
Well, I know you're not thinking about the next tour, right? But I mean, your kids do have to acclimate to this schedule, especially like this one's going to be a bit of a longer tour. So I know it doesn't dampen the missing of each other, but how do you keep connection while you're on tour? I mean, you're still a father and husband even while you're away on the job.
Yeah, of course, nowadays with all the Skyping and WhatsApp, it's really easy to keep in contact, but it's totally different if you're away. But the weird thing is, when they were younger, we toured a lot, and now we had this sabbatical, so to say, and they're still young, so they don't really, they forgot about me being away. So then we had this little tour in Latin America last year. And then suddenly they experienced it again, and I was away for a month.
Yeah, they're like, where's dad?
Yeah, it's been a while. And now they are older. They can also express more that they miss you, which is makes it really that much more difficult of being away. Also with the time differences, you know, those concepts, if they're really young, they just see daddy on the screen and that's fine. But now they question stuff like, where are you? Why are you away? When do you come home? How many nights of sleep, you know? And what time is it over there? How is that possible? It's totally different. But then again, if you arrive back home, they are way more excited because they see you again. So yeah, it's a roller coaster of emotions, and it changes every tour. So now they are more aware of you being away, which makes it more difficult for them, but also for me, of course.
Well, there's also like, you know, there's events at school or, you know, things you might miss out on if you're away. How do you deal with that with them?
Well, that's also changing because in the beginning, for instance, birthdays, I think now my son just turned 6, and from the 6 birthdays, actual days, I was there for only 2 or 3, which sounds really terrible, of course. But if they turn 2, you can postpone it a week, right? They don't know. So, but now when they become 6 and 7, that day is a magical day. So it's really hard to explain that you cannot be there. But as far as those days, for now, I've been at home for like 1.5 years. So they are spoiled, but they don't know it. So it's going to be hard for the next birthday. I'm not there because it's really hard to also book a tour and, you know, have everybody's birthday not being on tour. It's impossible. Yeah, you cannot plan the birth of your kids that well, unfortunately.
At least they're at an age now where you can talk with them about it and they can kind of know ahead of time what's going to happen instead of just being unaware.
Yeah, and the good thing as well is that, of course, when we grew bigger as a band, the tours are booked way more in advance. So you can plan way better ahead, and that's better for everything.
Well, besides Epica 8, do you have any other exciting projects coming up, or is the new album just currently your sole focus?
Yeah, we are in the middle of recording. It's really fun. I'm really enjoying it again. Not that I didn't enjoy it the previous times, but I think after that this year of not being around everybody all the time, there's some renewed energy. Yeah, and I think you can hear it in the material, and I think everybody feels it like that. So that's a really good thing. I'm really happy about that. And yeah, it has my main focus, besides my family, of course, because they have to eat as well. So I have to make them bread for school and, you know. But last year I did some Dragon Force, and I did an exciting project as well, which I hopefully comes out as soon as possible. But they had some issues with the label about that. It's going to be released somewhere someday, but it's already done. I think it's already been done for like a few months, and it sounds really cool. I'm really happy about it. I also did like the keys and the orchestration for that band. Yeah, it has some connections with things I did in the past, so I'm really excited about that. And then I did something for Jens for his new record, so I'm really happy with that too. Really honored that he asked me as well, so it's cool that I could help him out, as he helped us out a lot. He did the album with Joost as well. And I also, I'm really happy that, kind of, because Joost does the same thing, right? And he's one of the guys I really look up to as a producer and a arranger and stuff. So for me, that's also kind of acknowledgement that he likes what I do as well. So I really loved that he gave me like his blessing to do that as well. And he actually liked it too, what I did. So it's you know, baby steps towards maybe a kind of a side career I'm working on.
Well, Jens is a good egg.
Yeah, he's a great guy. I love it. And he really wrote, yeah, it's really weird because he does all this stuff for other bands, but...
Oh my God, he's insane.
Yeah, and but he still, you know, he can actually really play and write songs. So his band is really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll bring him over here with you one time.
Oh, that, I think, yeah, I think he would like that. Yeah.
All right, just putting that out there into the universe. Wouldn't mind that a bit.
Yeah, that's it's cool. It's a great band. New album sounds really good too, by the way. So check that out.
Oh yeah, definitely, for sure. So, well, those are all the questions I had for you today, Koen. Thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thank you for having me. Although I pressured you a little bit, but...
No, I swear I had a sixth sense. I was like, he's going to ask me. He's going to say something, and you did. So, and I welcome it. I had wanted you to be on the podcast anyway.
Yeah,
so
really.
It all worked out perfectly.
I hope I was interesting enough for your listeners.
Absolutely.
And if not, they can complain at your address, right?
Oh, yeah. That's fine.
To stay up to date about Epica's 8th studio album and to purchase tickets to their upcoming Epic Apocalypse tour through Europe, visit epica.nl. Visit metalmavenpodcast.com for links to Koen's social profiles, videos, and read the full transcript of this interview. Thanks for tuning in, and be sure to subscribe to Metal Maven Podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and Google.